This presentation is on the passive control and sensitivity analysis of thermoacoustic systems with adjoint equations. My name is Matthew Juniper. This work was done by a PhD student, Luca Magri. I'm going to start by explaining what I mean by a thermoacoustic system by using a little experiment that we did in our laboratory. So we take a camping gas burner, a few hundred watts, and then take a tube that's completely empty, put it over the top, and you get a surprisingly loud noise. So that's a thermoacoustic system. Now, what do I mean by a sensitivity analysis, and what do I mean by adjoint equations? I will demonstrate this by looking at the flow around a cylinder at a Reynolds number of 50. At this Reynolds number, we can find a steady solution to the Navier-Stokes equations. That means a solution that doesn't change in time, but that steady solution is unstable. Specifically, in this case, we find that small oscillations start to grow on top of this solution until we get the famous von Karman vortex shedding behind the cylinder. To analyze this flow, we imagine small perturbations on top of this base flow, and we linearize the Navier-Stokes equations around this base flow. In other words, we write down the Navier-Stokes equations for small perturbations around the base flow at a Reynolds number of 50. What we would normally do then is discretize those equations onto a grid to form the discretized, direct, linearized Navier-Stokes equations. And then we would look for solutions of the form U, which is a function of x and y, times an exponential of sigma times t. And then we get an eigenvalue problem, where the eigenvalue is sigma, and the corresponding eigenfunction is this U as a function of x and y. And what I've done here is shown the modulus of U hat as a function of x and y, and that's known as the direct global mode. So sigma is the eigenvalue, U hat is the eigenfunction, and here we can see that the direct global mode develops some way downstream of the cylinder that I've shown here, it reaches a maximum around 20 cylinder diameters downstream. And you can think of this direct global mode as the shape that grows the fastest of all the possible shapes that can grow on top of this base flow. The shape that grows the fastest is the first direct global mode, that is the one that has the eigenvalue with the largest growth rate. Now, to derive the adjoint linearized Navier-Stokes equations, we need first of all to define an inner product. An inner product is something that allows you to extract a number from two field variables, A and B, for example. And a typical inner product is simply to say that it's the integral of A times B over some volume. So I'd refer you to Hill's 1992 paper, or Giannetti and Lucchini in 2007, or several review papers since then, to show how to derive the continuous adjoint linearized Navier-Stokes equations. Once we've got them, we use the same procedure as before to get the discretized adjoint linearized Navier-Stokes equations, and then we perform the same Fourier decomposition as before. U adjoint as a function of x, y, and t is equal to U adjoint hat as a function of x and y, which is the eigenfunction, times exponential of sigma adjoint times t, where sigma adjoint is the eigenvalue. And depending on how you've defined your inner product, the adjoint eigenvalue is usually the complex conjugate of the direct eigenvalue, although the adjoint eigenfunction does not look anything like the direct eigenfunction, because this particular problem made on the linearized Navier-Stokes equations is not self-adjoint. So you find an adjoint eigenfunction that corresponds to the direct eigenfunction, and we call this the adjoint global mode. Now, the adjoint global mode has a nice physical meaning. It's the sensitivity of the direct global mode to some open loop forcing, that is, some external harmonic forcing from outside the system. So what this is showing us, this adjoint global mode, is that if we want to change the frequency or growth rate of the direct global mode, the best place to force the system is just here, around the shoulder of the cylinder. So if we placed some actuator into the system in those positions, one of those positions, we could have the most influence on the growth rate or frequency of the direct global mode. And by combining the direct global mode, the adjoint global mode, the base flow, and the adjoint base flow, we can get the sensitivity to internal feedback in the system. So the picture at the bottom right shows us the best place to put a control cylinder in the flow. In this case, if we want to change the frequency or the growth rate of the direct global mode by using some passive control cylinder, then the best place to put that small control cylinder is just there. Now that was a very quick introduction. There are several good review articles on this in the field of hydrodynamics. I'd just like to point out that in the inner product, if A and B are vectors, as they would be in this case, they'd both be the velocity vector, then you need to take the dot product between them in the inner product. So the aim of this work is to take these ideas from hydrodynamics and apply them to thermoacoustics. So the next thing to do is to define the thermoacoustic system that we will look at. So we will look at a very simple thermoacoustic system known as a horizontal Rieker tube. It's just an empty tube with a forced airflow from left to right and with a hot wire placed in the first half of the tube. And as the speed of the air changes around the wire, the heat transfer from the wire into the fluid also changes. A bit later on in the work, we will add a control hot wire a bit further down the tube. But to start off with, we will assume that there is just one hot wire in the tube. So we form equations for the acoustic velocity and the acoustic pressure within the tube. The first of these equations is the momentum equation, and the second of these equations is the energy equation. Now these equations are very simple, but they contain most of the physics that we want to examine, and the model is sufficiently simple that it provides a very convenient testbed for the sensitivity analysis using adjoint equations. So I'll describe the physics that they contain in turn. If we start off by looking at the variables highlighted in blue, you can see a wave equation forming here. If you eliminate u or p, you'll end up with a d2u by dt squared minus d2u by dx squared equals zero, so we get a wave equation. And that's the equation for the acoustic waves. What we do next is add in a damping term. Now the exact form of the damping term is quite influential, but it's not the main focus of this work, so we're going to use a very simple damping model here. What's far more interesting is the heat release term, which is the term in pink. And here we take the velocity at the hot wire, subject to a time delay tau, meaning that we say that the heat release at the wire is a function of the velocity of the wire some time ago. And then we form that into a nonlinear function that I've shown on the right of the screen. We multiply it by beta, which you can think of as the non-dimensional wire temperature. And then we apply that heat release at the position of the hot wire by using this delta function. So these are the governing equations, and now we follow the same procedure as before. First of all, we linearize, meaning that we look at small oscillations around the non-oscillating steady solution. Secondly, we discretize, and in this case we discretize by looking only at the what I call the organ pipe modes. So these are harmonic modes that satisfy the boundary conditions. Thirdly, we look for solutions of the form u hat as a function of x, e to the sigma t, and p hat as a function of x, e to the sigma t. So this gives us our eigenfunctions u hat and p hat, and our eigenvalues sigma. Next we define an inner product, which in this case is u squared plus p squared integrated across the whole Rieker tube, which conveniently is twice the acoustic energy of the system. And then using that inner product we form the adjoint equations. Once we have the adjoint equations, we do the same Fourier decomposition as before in order to get the adjoint global modes, which are the adjoint eigenfunction. We can use these adjoint equations in a number of different ways. The way I will start with is to show the effect of this second hot wire as a control wire. In other words, I will predict the effect that the control wire has on the eigenvalues of this system, i.e. on the frequency and growth rate of perturbations in the system. So I'm going to skip the detailed analysis, which is all in the paper, and jump straight to the results for the second hot wire. Let's look just at the top left chart. On the horizontal axis is the position of the hot wire, XC, from 0 at the left-hand end of the Rika tube, the entry end, to 1 at the right-hand end. On the vertical axis is the real part of delta sigma by delta beta, where sigma is the eigenvalue of perturbations that grow on top of this system, and where beta is the non-dimensional temperature of the control wire. Now remember that the eigenvalues have the form, say, u as a function of x times e to the sigma t, so the real part of sigma gives the growth rate and the imaginary part of sigma gives the frequency. That means that the real part of d sigma by d beta gives you the drift in the growth rate, and the imaginary part of d sigma by d beta gives you the frequency drift. And all four figures here have the same value on the horizontal axis, which is the position of the control wire. Now the first thing to note is the scales of the top left chart and the top right chart. The top left chart has a much smaller left-hand scale than the top right chart. And this shows us that the control wire has a much larger effect on the frequency than it does on the growth rate of perturbations. And this is to be expected. It's because the time delay that we chose for the model of the hot wire is very much smaller than the period of the oscillations. And this means that the changes in heat released that are caused by the fluctuating velocity are more in phase with the velocity than they are in phase with the pressure fluctuations. So having pointed out that change in scale, let's now look in more detail at the results as a function of XC. Now the first thing you'll notice is that there are four lines on each chart, of which you can see three. The first of these, the dark line, corresponds to the exact result we found by just brute force calculations. So think of it as the exact result found with finite difference very expensively. The result in circles is the one we found using the discrete adjoint, and then the two triangles upside down and the right way up triangles are what we found using the continuous adjoint. So these are three different ways to formulate the adjoint equations. The details of these are in the paper, but the most important point is that the discrete adjoint and the finite difference results lie right on top of each other. So we concluded that for this system, the discrete adjoint was the best, and I'll say no more about that in this talk. So in these charts, we'll just look at the circles with the black line running through them. So these results show us that if we were to place a hot wire in approximately the first half of the tube, it would be destabilizing. And over approximately the same range, it would also increase the frequency of the oscillations. On the other hand, if we place it in the second half of the tube, the downstream half of the tube, it's stabilizing. And over approximately the same region, it decreases the frequency. And not only does this method very quickly tell us the effect of the control wire, it shows us the best place to put this control wire in order to most stabilize the system. And this could be extremely useful in a practical situation. At the moment, people often calculate the direct global mode inside a thermoacoustic network. If one could also calculate the adjoint global mode, then with a very quick calculation, you can find out the best location to place some passive feedback device in order to most stabilize your system. In this case, we've chosen the stabilizing device to be a hot wire, which it turns out is not particularly good at stabilizing the system, but we could have chosen something like a Helmholtz resonator, or maybe a gauze, or maybe a change in the area of the tube. Now, we also checked these results by using a more conventional method, that is to calculate the Rayleigh index, in this case of the system containing the control wire. Essentially, this says, let's integrate the system over one cycle of oscillations and work out whether there is energy put into the system or energy taken out. If energy is put into the system over one cycle, then we expect the oscillation amplitude to grow, and if it's taken out, then we expect it to decay. Now this technique makes an approximation, which is that the oscillation is cyclic, i.e. of fixed amplitude. In this case we know that it's not, because it's either growing or decaying. So the Rayleigh index approach is only approximate. Nonetheless, the most important point is that it predicts exactly the same position where the wire has no effect at all, either on the growth rate or on the frequency. So in the left two charts, we predict that if we place the wire at this position, the Rayleigh index method says there'll be no change in energy over a cycle, and the discrete adjoint method says that there will be no change in the growth rate as well. And then at a slightly different position, very slightly, the Rayleigh index says that the hot wire will have no effect on the frequency, and the discrete adjoint method says that at the same position it also will have no effect on the frequency. So this is a nice confirmation of the method using a well-established way of working out the change in growth rate using the Rayleigh index. So that was the result when we said, let's look at the effect of another hot wire. But what we can also do with this method is say, what would be the best possible feedback device in order to control the growth rate of this system? And we do that by looking at the different possible feedback mechanisms independently. When we calculate the structural sensitivity, we end up with a tensor, and this tensor contains four components. We'll consider the first of these. It is the effect on the eigenvalue of feedback from the acoustic velocity and into the acoustic momentum equation. In other words, if we had some device that takes as an input the acoustic velocity and then forces the acoustic momentum equation, this part of the structural sensitivity tensor tells us the effect that that device would have on the eigenvalue of the system. The top left chart is the real part of S11, which is the feedback from the acoustic velocity into the acoustic momentum equation, and so the left hand axis is the real part of S11. So it is the change in the growth rate due to feedback from U, the acoustic velocity, into the momentum equation. Now the horizontal axis is the location of this feedback, and we see that if we placed such a device in this point in the tube, it would have no effect on the growth rate of the oscillations. On the other hand, if we were to place such a feedback device at either end of the tube, it would have a large effect. And in this case, we see that if we had some device that gave you a positive forcing, i.e. a positive force in the x direction in the momentum equation, proportional to the velocity in the x direction, then it would be largely destabilizing when put at either end of the tube. Now it's difficult to imagine such a device, nonetheless it's very easy to imagine the opposite device, that is something that gives you a force in the opposite direction to the velocity at a point in space, and just the drag from an object in the flow would provide such a force. For example, let's just think of a wire placed in the flow. The velocity around it, there's a mean flow u, and then a perturbation that we're examining, I'll call that u prime. And if there's a fluctuation in u around this object, the object exerts a drag force on the flow that is proportional to u mean times u prime, and is in the opposite direction to u prime. So we see, using this technique, that something that gives you a drag force is very stabilizing when placed at the downstream or the upstream ends of the flow. So this is another really useful feature of this analysis, because it tells you which type of feedback is most stabilizing. And once you know which type of feedback is most stabilizing, you can then think, what sort of device could I invent in order to create that type of feedback? I'll just briefly mention what the other three charts are. The top right one is the influence of feedback from the pressure into the momentum equation. The bottom left one is the effect of feedback from the velocity into the energy equation. That's just like the effect of the hot wire. And the bottom right one is the effect of feedback from the pressure into the energy equation. And we can see that that one has a large effect on the growth rate, whereas the other two, top right and bottom left, have a very small effect indeed on the growth rate. This slide also shows a check we did on the convergence of our discretization scheme, but I won't say any more about that in this presentation. The direct and adjoint global modes are both calculated on the linear system. That is to say, we've taken our Rieker tube with a hot wire inside it, and we've looked at the steady state, linearized, in other words, looked at small perturbations around the steady state, and that's how we got the direct and adjoint global modes. The direct mode gives us the shape that grows fastest away from that steady state, and the adjoint mode tells us how to control that. For example, in the case of a control wire, we found that the best place to put the control wire was in the second half of the tube, around x equals 0.8. And it's worth checking that this control wire can stabilize the system when it's already started oscillating. So that's what we do here by doing a time integration of the fully nonlinear system. So on the horizontal axis of this chart, which is about to get a bit longer, we have the non-dimensional time from 0 to 1000, and on the vertical axis we have the acoustic pressure. Now we've chosen to make life quite easy for ourselves by looking at a small value of the pressure oscillations, so we've let the oscillations build up from time 0 to time 1000, but they're always quite small. What we do then is take the fast Fourier transform of the pressure signal, so here we have the angular frequency, and we see that from time 0 to 1000, which is when we have just the hot wire and no control wire, we have oscillations with an angular frequency of around 3.35. Now at time t equals 1000, we turn on the control wire. And this control wire has been placed at the point where it should have the most effect on the growth rate. It should stabilize the system, but we also know it has a large effect on the frequency. And then we let the time evolve from 1000 up to 10,000, and we see, sure enough, that now the system decays back to zero when the control wire is in place. So we see, as we had hoped, that the control wire is indeed stabilizing. And furthermore, we see that the angular frequency of oscillations has changed, in this case to around 3.33. And both of these, the change in frequency and the change in growth rate, are what we expected from the sensitivity analysis based on the direct and adjoint global modes. So, time to summarize. We've successfully adapted adjoint sensitivity analysis to simple thermoacoustic systems. This sort of analysis was originally developed for matrices and then applied to hydrodynamic stability within the last few years. The first thing we can do with this is say, let's say we've got some passive feedback device and we know what sort of feedback it generates. Let's look at the influence that that has on the system. And we did that looking at a second heat source, so a control wire, we called it, inside the simple thermoacoustic system we examined. But I think there's a much cleverer way to use this type of analysis. By looking at the components of the structural sensitivity tensor, we can see which types of feedback are particularly good at stabilizing the system. And then, once we know what they are, we can say what type of device would give us that type of feedback. So in industry, for example, you would develop something like a gas turbine, use a standard analysis to find the direct global modes, and that tells you the frequency and growth rate of oscillations that will tend to grow inside that device. Then you formulate the adjoint equations, work out the adjoint global mode. By combining those two results, you find exactly the right type of feedback that will reduce the growth rate of those oscillations and, if possible, stabilize them. And then you can say, what sort of device can I put into my gas turbine in order to create that type of feedback? So finally, we've checked the predictions of the adjoint sensitivity analysis, which is a linear analysis, against the outcomes of nonlinear simulations. The results are very similar, although I should mention that we made life quite easy for ourselves by looking just at small oscillations. That begs the question, what's next? Well, there are three things. The first thing is what we'll call a base state sensitivity analysis, and this asks how you can change the growth rate or the frequency of the oscillation just by changing the original system rather than by adding a second passive feedback device. Secondly is to look at more elaborate thermoacoustic systems. The one we've looked at so far has very simple acoustics and very simple heat release. What we'll do next is make the acoustics more elaborate, more realistic, and the heat release more realistic, so we'll model a flame. And thirdly, we'll try to control a system that is already oscillating. We'll do that by linearizing around a periodic solution rather than what we've done here, which is linearize around a fixed point. So I think that this could be a really useful technique for the study of thermoacoustic oscillations.